This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I thought they just played on that like really, really wanky kind of place so well.
The food they were given was brilliant. Yeah. I that was very laugh out loud for me.
Yeah. What was
the whole
it? Was
thing about listening to the venison?
Yes.
And you can listen to it.
Yeah.
Its final moments, Keanu, as you eat it.
Wasn't it Keanu said, "Do you have anything on the menu that's?"
Messes with time.
The concept of time.
Plays with the concept of time. Yes, we have the venison, and we give you earphones of the venison as it's been killed. And Keanu crying as he's eating it.
Oh, yeah.
And then immediately going to not.
Hello, film fans. Thanks for listening today. Joining us in the studio, we have Sarah May.
Hello.
Susie.
Hi there.
And as always, Kobe.
Hello.
And we're reviewing the 2019 film, Always Be My Maybe. Thank you, as always, to the Mighty People for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher. Hello and welcome to this slightly noisier than usual episode of a FlixWatcher podcast. Where we're recording, there's a bit of a party going on, so we apologise for the background noise that you can hear in the background. But to compensate for that, we have two fantastic guests. We have Sarah May and Susie. If you would like to say hello and tell our listeners about the podcast that you do, please.
Hi there. Season one of my little indie podcast company, Fable Gazers.
You might want to say your name.
Who are you? I mean, you have. Would you say that we have had Sarah May on before, so maybe.
But that was a long time ago. I still think it's fair to say your name before you start speaking for the first time in this episode.
If you're an award-winning podcaster, they should know your voice.
Like Kylie.
Oh, God. My name is Sarah May Dusen. And I'm the senior producer of Fable Gazers, indie podcast company. We do different stories every year or as frequently as we can manage to get them out. And season one was called The Sugar Baby Confessionals, and that's out now. Season two I'm working on. I'm hoping to have out by the end of the year. It's all about Georgette Heyer, who's an amazing and highly underrated writer. And I'll be talking to people like Stephen Fry, Joanne Harris, Garth Nix, all sorts of lovely people. I'll have a book club that you can join up to and a cinematic investigation of why her books haven't been made into films. I'm doing everything in this podcast, and I don't know if I'm going to manage to do it all, but I'm going to try my best.
At least you're trying, though. That's the thing, isn't it?
Yes.
And setting yourself those goals that like seem far away, but at least you've tried.
So far away.
Yeah.
So very far away.
Better to have tried and failed.
This is it.
Yeah.
Or succeeded.
Exactly.
We all believe in Sarah May.
Thank you, Susie Glass.
I'm not saying you won't succeed, but I'm saying it's better to try than just kind of think, than to think that seems like too far away. I'm not going to bother. You're getting off the couch and going,
yes,
taking the first steps to succeeding.
Well, actually, I'm on the couch currently with the laptop trying to do the work. So, Susie?
Hi, I'm Susie Buttress. I'm the host of the Casual Birder podcast, which is a show about wild birds. And I feature birds from the UK and Europe and America and Canada and further afield. I've been lucky enough to travel to Antarctica and recently to Mexico. And
what kind of birds you get in Mexico?
Oh, well, I saw quite a few species of hummingbird.
Oh, right. I love hummingbirds.
We were actually on a whale-watching cruise for 11 days with a well-known conservationist, Mark Carwardine. And so we mainly were seeing seabirds, but then we spent a week on land in Baja California, and that was just amazing. But, yeah, that seeing all the different hummingbirds and other birds like orioles, which we just don't have over here and are just so colourful and wonderful to see.
When I first saw hummingbird is on like Wildlife on One, and because they always used to fill up the whole screen, I thought they were massive. And the first time you see them, it's like the size of your thumb.
Yeah.
The first time I saw it was like in Brazil, and I was just like, what's that? I was like 25, so I should have known better at this point. And I just thought, what's that? Oh, of course, because it'd be insane if they're the size of like an owl or a normal sized bird and they're flapping their wings that fast. It would be literally physically like difficult.
Yeah, they would have taken over the world, I think. No, but that's really interesting about how, perception through looking at wildlife documentaries and things can actually distort what you think.
Because they were really is literally the same size as a lion, which is like the next, hummingbird one shot,
really,
and then
surprised.
And then there's a lion in the next shot.
So I was going to ask a quick question. Do you have a favourite bird?
Yes. The bird that will be my favourite is the one that will come to my hand and take food from it. So I don't mind which bird it is.
Goose.
Even a goose. But one that will sit on my hand, like a little chickadee or a woodpecker or something like that, I would, as long as I get to feel like Snow White, all is good.
Sarah Mae, have you got a favourite bird?
I saw a really colourful jay in the garden. I thought, in my ignorance, I thought, wow, what kind of an amazing tropical bird is that? And then only to realise it was quite a common bird. But it was very beautiful.
Maybe common, but quite shy. So you were lucky to see them.
There's lots of jays in Regent's Park at the moment.
Right. So it must be all the youngsters that are around from having fledged and making themselves more obvious. Check out my COVID episode to find out more about the jay.
So we're talking today about Always Be My Maybe, which is Sarah Mae's choice. Sarah Mae, can you tell us why you chose it and give us a 2-minute synopsis?
Okay. Right. So childhood friends Sasha Tran and Marcus, forget his surname, fall out after sleeping together. And then they don't speak again for 16 years. When Sasha, who's now a celebrity chef, comes back to San Francisco to open a new restaurant, and they reconnect. But will they get together? I don't know. Do they? Will they? Won't they? Let's see.
So that was the synopsis. So why did you choose it?
I chose it because I'm a huge rom-com fan. I'm a huge romance fan. And so I always snap up these kind of offerings. And sometimes they fall very flat, which is very disappointing for me because I feel like it's quite a low bar to make a rom-com good, decent. And this very much exceeded my expectations. I thought it was so funny, so sharp. I've really enjoyed the relationship between the real life. They have a real life friendship, Ali Wong and Randall Park, who are the two leads, and they wrote and produced it as well. So it's really wonderfully diverse. Also, I love that. I love the way that this. It's not making a big thing about the fact that they're both Asian. It's just that happens to be what they are. And they're both wonderful in it. I really enjoyed it. And there's an amazing cameo with Keanu Reeves, which I loved.
Helen, what are your thoughts?
So I knew about this film because of the unlikely cameo of Keanu Reeves.
So you knew about the cameo before you started watching it?
I did, because people kept talking about, oh, there's an amazing cameo. And I was like, oh, what is it? Oh, it's Keanu Reeves.
Spoilers, guys. There's an amazing cameo with Keanu Reeves if you haven't watched the film.
There's a lot of things that I really, really liked about this film. And then there was a few things that I was less enamored with. But we've talked about this before because we reviewed to all the boys I've loved before, and the sort of the diversity in the casting with this. And it's really great to see a romantic comedy where the two leads are not white, or the female is not a blonde stick. So that was kind of nice and fun. And there's a lot of funny moments in it as well. He's in a terrible band. I mean, his band that he's in are awful. Even the bits that they're meant to be good, they're kind of like maybe go back to 2002 when like Smash Mouth and bands like that were the big thing.
So he's with someone who feels like can rap a bit but really can't and shouldn't be doing it.
He's in a band, and she's this amazing chef, which I just couldn't buy because she's flicking her hair around, and that would never. To just be like long black hairs in people's food when it came out, if she didn't tie her hair.
But Nigella Lawson's got long black hair.
And also she wasn't cooking in those bits. She was supervising, she's on her way to a swish, you know, event with her handsome fiance, who turns out to be not so nice, but also very funny. I think everybody was, all the actors were really getting into making fun of themselves in this movie. And he plays, you know, what is his name?
It's Daniel Day-Kim, which you will know him from Lost.
Yeah. And he's just, you know, uber handsome, the perfect boyfriend. And she thinks that she's, you know, her life is sorted. They're about to get married. And then he says to her, actually, let's postpone the wedding. And in the meantime, I'm going to go off to India and I'm going to like sleep around, and you're welcome to do that. And, you know, at first she's kind of, you know, you can see her trying to reconcile that and being, saying like, yeah, we'll be apart together. You know, and you just sort of know that it's not really what she's, what she wants, you know. She wants to have a baby and things like that and start doing those kind of things, settle down. So when she goes back to San Francisco and she reconnects with Marcus, you know, you do wonder, is that going to happen? And I think they developed that very, very well, because Marcus isn't, I mean, he's a bit of a loser in some ways. and he acts like a bit of a dick at several points in the movie. I felt like she's such a kick-ass career woman. And he sort of lets her down at several points. You know, when they sleep together, when they're teenagers, they've been best friends since they were young. And he's so horrible to her afterwards. I mean, I know his mom has just died, who's been a mother to both of them. And he kind of says something pretty unforgivable to her about how, you know, she'll never really understand this loss, even though it's clear that she does. And I thought they did that in such a beautifully organic way.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, the sex scene was funny. The aftermath of the sex scene was really funny. Things like down to earth things, like she says immediately afterwards, you know, just the way that he's awkwardly trying to touch her with his arm and he doesn't know what to do with his arm. And she's like, your car smells like Parmesan, you know, and he's just like, yeah, there's some Parmesan in the glove. I mean, I love that kind of thing. I just thought it was really funny. And, you know, it moved, segued from there to quite an emotional moment. Quite well, I thought they navigated that well. I don't know why they wouldn't have spoken for 16 years. That seems a bit intense, especially for people who've been best friends from when they were young.
You thought, and the fact that they used to live next door to each other. So I can't. Yeah, one of the things I hate trying to reconcile logic in a film, but if they lived literally next door to each other and they had sex, like before or around the time of graduation, and you can't believe that they literally haven't spoken to each other for 16
years.
And
also, Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook. Well, this is Facebook certainly, but. Still, after the first few years of college, you would have come back over the summers, you would have seen each other, even though it would have been horribly awkward. That kind of...
Unless I think the kind of point is because she hates her family, she has basically just never, ever come home and is basically just been opening restaurants and traveling and having this like amazing life and has never had any reason to come back, I guess. I don't know.
Well, that was one kind of story thread through, wasn't it? Where she was literally avoiding her parents and didn't even tell her parents that she was just back in San Francisco because that was the next place on the map to open a restaurant, rather than the fact that, oh, I need to go back to San Francisco and see my old people. It was like she didn't even want her parents to know she was there, pick them up from the airport and engage with her. And she was really pissed off that time she actually turned up. They actually turned up to her restaurant.
Due to her friend.
Yeah.
Due to her friend,
Who also got... Marcus and her back together again.
I think, you know, there's a part of me that was kind of like, why would she be attracted to Marcus? You know, he's got no ambition, which she notes. It's one of the things she talks about to him. He's almost like, oh, agoraphobic in the sense that he stays, he just even wants to play gigs just in the same block kind of thing. And he smokes tons of weed and stuff like that. And, you know, you can, his excuse is that he's looking after his diabetic dad, but actually it's because he's just stuck. He's one of those people that's stuck, and she's this big force of change in his life. And I think that's what she brings to him. But I was thinking about it, and I think what's nice about their relationship, and they, it really is highlighted when she starts dating Keanu Reeves, is that they have a wonderful sense of humor and they're completely honest with each other. And that does make for a nice dynamic. And you kind of see that by the end, despite his, you know, he kind of overcomes his reluctance and starts to like grudgingly, you know, move forward and make compromises for her. Which, and I thought they dealt with that really nicely as well. I mean, it wasn't like a situation where she gives up her career, or we're kind of made to feel like, oh, this awful career woman is like not sacrificing everything for the man in her life, you know. And I like that, you know. She doesn't take shit from him either.
I think there's a one thing I liked. Carrying on from that, I really did like the fact that it was her thrust and it was kind of mainly her narrative in terms of them going back to appearing together and then him having to join her in New York. But I also find it kind of hard that if they did want to have a life together, it was it was a complete upheaval, not just if it was kind of role reversal. If it was a man that came up along and said, let's stay together, but you're gonna have to go to New York for 6 months and then go to a different place for 6 months and then go to a different place for six months, I find that, for me, that found a bit tense. I'd just rather have like a place we can have as our own, and you know, maybe you go to New York for 6 months and we'll join you for a bit, but let's have our, I would have liked if she'd have said, let's make San Francisco our home and we'll have this house and we can come back here like every summer and then still open my restaurants. I think that, for me, that seemed like a more logical,
realistic thing. At the end, at the very end, when she her compromise to him, it felt like to me what they were kind of saying was she makes this restaurant that's based on his mum's cooking. And my feeling
and not
was
selling out.
Yeah. And my feeling was that because she also mentioned wanting to have a baby, that might be their base.
Sure. Okay.
That might they start, you know, I can't remember if that was in New York or if that was in San Francisco as well. But anyway, so I did kind of feel like she was listening to him. She was taking certain things that he said on board and stuff like that. It wasn't just him. Mind you, he didn't really have anything to give up.
Yeah, I mean, I was like...
The band, man.
He was cramping his dad's sexual style as well.
You know, kind of Diana Ross.
Yeah, with Diana Ross. But yeah, no, I thought it was... And, you know, there were just such fun moments. It's one of those movies where there's so many funny bits. I mean, we have to talk about the Keanu Reeves.
Let's talk about Keanu Reeves.
Because, so, she decides she's going to give it a go with Marcus, but then it turns out that he's dating Jenny, this girl who's a brilliant caricature of like the most hippy dippy person imaginable, but it turns out she's actually super ambitious as well. We find after the Keanu Reeves incident. And so they go on a very awkward double date with, it turns out, Keanu Reeves, who walks in, you know, to his own theme tune and his hair
in slow motion.
Yeah. And you know, it's, first of all, it's a very poncy restaurant, so poor Marcus is in his like prom tux, which is like really dated, and you know, Keanu
just feels out of place straight away.
Exactly. And Keanu walks in looking like $1 million and, you know, Tom Ford and everything. And I thought they just played on that like really, really wanky kind of place so well.
The food they were given was brilliant. Yes. I that was very laugh out loud for me.
Yeah. Yeah. What was
the
whole
thing about listening to the venison?
Yes. Yes.
And you can listen to it.
Yeah.
Its final moments, Keanu, as you eat it.
Wasn't it Keanu said, do you have anything on the menu that
messes with time?
The concept of time.
Plays with the concept of time. Yes, we have the venison and we give you earphones of the venison as it's been killed. And Keanu crying as he's eating it.
Oh, yeah.
And then immediately going to eat it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. And it was interesting that, I've forgotten her name. What's the main character's name?
Sasha.
She was straight in there eating it straight away.
Yeah. Didn't care.
No worries.
Tasty.
I like the way as well, the waiter's like, oh, and everything on the table is edible. And so Marcus is like, even this napkin? And he's like, and you know, Jenny's like, no, of course not the napkin.
He's such a person out of water in that pretentious environment. That was an amazing scene. That really was.
McCartney's had a decent year. I mean, I love John Wick, but this is not the kind of role I typically have him down as like
he's making fun of himself, and I thought that was so. I never expected that he would have such a, you know, he'd be so self-aware and able to laugh at himself like that. Because I mean, I guess you know it can be quite hard.
But his character is like a properly down to earth. Everyone loves Keanu Reeves because he's the person that rides the subway. He stands up for people. Yeah. He stands up for the older ladies. He'll sit and talk to the tramps in the park and stuff like that. You have lots of pictures of that. So this is playing like a super hyper version of Keanu that doesn't really exist.
Quite a distasteful character. And I was really surprised that Keanu would allow himself to be Keanu in it. So yeah, definitely poking fun at himself, but it really took turns that I was not expecting.
Yeah, because he sort of incites there's tension between him and Marcus from the get-go. He goes off and pays, and then you know Marcus is like, well, you didn't even give me a chance to argue with you, and he's going, listen, it was $6,500, so you know, and you wouldn't have been able to afford it, kind of thing. And then they go off to his hotel, and it's just another masterclass in this kind of like awkward tension where they're doing, is it like truth or asking questions, you know, and one of them is, who would you kill in this room? And Keanu's like, Marcus.
Everyone says Marcus, basically.
Yeah. Poor Marcus, except for Sasha. And then it ends in basically Keanu inciting Marcus to punch him in the face, you know, which is really, really funny.
I love the way it ended where Keanu orders him an Uber.
It's
an Uber pool. It's like...
yeah.
You bastard. That's and the final
Janie's,
straw.
Janie stays because she's like, listen, I need him to help my sort of children's community thing. And, you know what celebrities can really help. And he goes, well, you know, look what Leonardo has done for the environment. He's like, what did he do? And she's just like, well, he's working on it. You know, things like that were really funny, you know, and I don't know if that's because they're kind of celebrities themselves, obviously, Randall Park and Ali Wong. And they have a very, very sharp eye for this kind of lack of humility and wank, you know, and I really enjoyed that.
I think as much as I love the Keanu Reeves bit, it kind of took the film into a weirder direction. It does make the film better. Generally, it makes it more like, guys, you should see this film, but I'm not going to explain why. And it's the funniest part of the film, but also it kind of detracts from the kind of point in a way.
Oh, do you think so?
Yeah, I feel it kind of took away from it because I think Randall Park, I love him and everything I've seen him in, like even like Iron Man, and he's in Veep quite a lot. And his stand-up's good. I've not seen Ella Wong's stand-up, but she's got a couple of specials on Netflix where she's pregnant both times and she's supposed to be amazing. But I love the kind of chemistry. I love the fact they put it together. I love the fact that like Randall Park's family's Korean, her family's Chinese. But that, again, that doesn't matter. They're both, but to a lot of people, there's no difference. But there is, from the start, you know, she goes to her mum's house and she's learned to make kimchi, which is not something that her parents would have taught her to make. So I loved all those little bits, but then that kind of Keanu bit took me a bit
surreal, yeah. I guess.
That was sort of fantastical, wasn't it, that bit?
Mm. I really liked it. I thought it worked well because
it's hilarious, definitely hilarious.
His main gripe with her lifestyle, because that's what causes the tension between them later when they get into a relationship, is that he feels that she's gotten too big for her boots. She's been too immersed in this, you know, surreal, if we, you know, say celebrity lifestyle where you lose touch with reality, you lose touch with who you are. And that's the whole point for that she has to, that in her journey, she has to come back to, you know, making authentic food that makes you feel at home, which she does by creating this restaurant, Julie's Place. So I actually thought it worked well thematically. And also it showed him, it allowed Marcus to sort of shine by comparison because he's not as big of a dick as Keanu is.
That is true because quite a long time through the film, I felt Marcus didn't really give much of himself. He was so laid back. He was almost too laid back, apart from when he wasn't pleasant to her after they slept together. Mm. But just his solidity and his like clarity of what is regular life kind of drew it back down and provided the rock in all of this, which sort of surprised me because I found it a really charming film, but I couldn't warm to Marcus at all.
That's really weird because I thought Marcus was the more believable of the character and the more kind of, I don't know, maybe based more in sort of reality. And I found Sasha just a little bit annoying. And I don't know whether that was because, you know, she's living kind of like the superficial lifestyle before she kind of realizes that actually what she really wants to do is make homemade food and be with Marcus. But I thought he was kind of genuinely most like kind of a man his age that hasn't really grown up and is kind of lost, whereas she, I don't know, there was just something that I thought she was maybe a bit too polished. And also, you're kind of like looking at them, they don't quite match in terms of numbers, you know, the numbers thing, when he's probably like maybe a 6 and she's like a 9. She maybe needs to be, he needs to be up a bit more, or she needs to maybe come down.
I mean, the disparity in attractiveness, that's a popular trope, I guess, in romantic comedies. I'm not sure there's that much of a difference between them.
Yeah, I thought they're both gorgeous.
But then I guess that's one of the things that happens is when you have a relationship when you're younger, and that underbearing like affinity for each other when you're very young, it's hard to kind of set that aside. So I didn't not buy it. I found it hard to take Marcus's lack of any kind of direction. You see it in films like Failure to Launch, where he doesn't want to leave home because he's
lazy.
I haven't
seen Failure to Launch.
I've not seen it, but I know just by the storyline and the brief bit of trailer I've seen, you can tell what it's about. But Marcus's kind of failure to want to even try is really sad. I found it really sad.
That was a bit annoying. So it comes to a point where in the film, probably about an hour in, when it feels like the film could move a little bit quicker to get where it is. And his real reluctance to move forward on anything gets a little bit annoying.
And they're kind of working with his dad. He doesn't want to even try a new audition with a band. I can understand why he doesn't want to go across the country to New York. I can understand why that's too big a step, but not even like
the small things.
Yeah.
But he does eventually. That's the thing. She's like the catalyzing force that, you know, breezes in back into his life and makes him and forces him to move and change. And he's been holding on to this, you know, that he has to stay with his dad because the mum's died and whatever. I mean, it is a flimsy thing, but I know people like that. You know, I know people that have, for one reason or another, just never managed to really push themselves out of their comfort zone. And he's got a really snuggly comfort zone. You know, he's got his little man cave. And the thing about him is, you know, it's not like he's unhappy. You know, he sort of is like dancing in the mirror to his music that he loves, you know.
And his dad joins him.
Exactly. His dad, I mean, his dad's great as well. And they have a wonderful relationship. But I suppose what they could have done more is maybe have him show some dissatisfaction with that sometimes. I mean, he is quite complacent. And even when she comes in and she's offering him quite a cool, you know, opportunity life, you know, relationship with her. And he's sort of, once again, he kind of falls down and he sort of sabotages himself. But again, I didn't feel like it was out of the realm of what life is. Because as I say, I know people like that. And, I thought it was interesting that instead of her having to be the one who kind of like gives up things and, you know, diminishes herself, he does take quite a mammoth step and he does go to New York and he does decide, he moves out of his dad's house at last, you know, and realizes his dad does have to say to him,
get out.
Yeah, listen, and don't be a downer in front of Diana Ross.
There's a couple of scenes though that I was like, really could not get to grips with. First of all, when she was at the black tie event, going to be interviewed by all the photographers and reporters, and he didn't have a jacket and they forced him to wear like this jacket with the really long arms. Why didn't he turn the sleeves up? He could have turned it into Miami Vice type, you know, 80s cool. And he just stood there with, you know, it was almost like he extra sabotaged himself by standing there with her gold bag and his long sleeves. I didn't understand.
I mean, that kind of thing, it could be that he just, some people just don't have any fashion sense, you know, and I certainly got that feeling with him.
Well, I mean, when he goes to the Tom Ford shop to think, okay, I need to do this properly, he has no concept of how much a Tom Ford like suit is going to cost until it's like on him. He's like, nope, take it off me.
It burns. That was really funny. Yeah, and he goes in. But I like that because that's there was definitely like lots of references to Asian culture, like her parents refusing to tip. Getting upset if she wants to tip, you know, drivers and things. So they're always insisting on coming to collect her and things like that. And with him as well, when he goes to the sort of discount suit store. I mean, there were lots of nice cameos from little side characters, like the guy in the suit shop is like telling him, it'll be really well for your first court appearance or maybe, you know, that job or when you want to go to a reunion, but you don't really want them to know how successful you are. And I just loved stuff like that, you know, really kind of incisive, well-observed comedy.
Should we head to the scores, guys?
Yeah.
Welcome to our unique scoring system. All of our scores are out of 5. You may have decimal places. And as always, we'll start with the recommendability. And Sarah May, you can kick us off.
I would give it a 5 because I can't think of any reason not to recommend. It's a good time for people. It's funny, you know. I mean, if something can make me laugh, that's a comedy that makes me actually laugh because it's quite rare, actually. Mm. I'm like definitely recommending it to everybody.
Susie?
I would probably say 4. I thought it was really well written. It's quite charming. But there were quite a few parts of it that I just didn't get. And I would find it hard to recommend it to people on that basis. It was, like I say, really well written. And there were some funny bits in it for me. There were bits that I wouldn't wholeheartedly recommend it.
Helen?
So it is funny and it is great to see kind of diversity in casting. But it's not When Harry Met Sally. It's not quite up there with that. And I don't know whether we're still going to be talking about this in, 20 years' time as we would do with that. And one thing that I forgot to mention that really, really annoyed me about it is the overuse of really loud music. To kind of cut between scenes, which I don't know whether anyone else noticed it, but I find that slightly annoying, which I think will probably maybe age it. But that said, you know, it is fairly enjoyable and, you know, they both really throw themselves into it. And, you know, it's got a really nice warm heart. And I think if you like romantic comedies, then you should definitely give it a go. So I'm going to go for a 4 on that one as well.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 4 because, you know, it's unassuming. It's not. There's a lot of things to take away from it. I'd probably recommend it to people mainly because of the Keanu Reeves aspect of it, because I think it is really funny, but I think it just takes away from a lot of the more subtle things that I think the film's trying to do. One genius bit of casting is that a lot of people don't know that Keanu Reeves is Chinese, he's like half Chinese, half Hawaiian. So he's a mixed race actor. So it is really good casting, but I think, and so it kind of plays still within that kind of, that type of people who were showing. But I still think it's like, I wish I could have done a really funny bit, but not had to bring someone else to like almost be the special effects funny part of the film. Does that make sense?
The fact that Keanu is like the kind of the joke, the big joke.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. And also,
it's the reason I recommend it, but at the same time, it's the reason I'm kind of like, I wish I could have done something as excellent without.
It's funny, but then also I think about Keanu Reeves and I'm like, think about how hard he's had to work for the past kind of 15 years to reinvent himself and to get taken seriously and to, you know, actually have people go and watch his films because, you know, kind of before The Matrix and then after The Matrix, he was very uncool again, and he was. But he really struggled. Apart from John Wick, there hasn't really been anything that he's been in that's been as popular as The Matrix or, you know, Speed or...
I think the problem with, Keanu is that he's never cast properly. And once he started kind of power really rose, they started to tried to cast him in films which just don't really fit his acting style. And that's why it becomes
style.
I know. I don't think he's the best actor there, but he's his sheer Keanu-ness. As you were saying, Kobe, in the right role is just, you know, so delightful. So, I mean, I think that he you can see that he's relishing this role.
Yeah.
And he's having fun. And that's really nice to see.
But I don't think it hinges just on Keanu. So I don't know that I necessarily agree with you, Kobe, that, you know, if he wasn't in it, this film would still have its charm, would still have its quirkiness.
Oh, that's exactly what I'm saying. I think it's got all that to it. I just wish that the main reason I'd be recommending it to people wasn't the fact that Keanu's in there. I wish the main people I was recommending main reason I was recommending it to people is because there's all this other layers to it that we don't see normally, and it's a good fun film without it. I think without Keanu, it's a less interesting film. So my point was, I wish there was a set piece or something they could do without bringing another actor in or thing to make it. To elevate it is my feels.
It's interesting because I think if I was recommending it to people, I don't know that I'd even mention Keanu.
I wouldn't mention it. I'd just say, yeah, guys, watch it. It's fucking brilliant and have fun with it. Watch it all the way to the end.
Tell me afterwards.
Yeah, exactly. repeat viewing score. Sarah May.
I've already seen it twice.
it's been out, what, a month now?
I had to rewatch it just to refresh my memory. So I would say probably 4.5.
Boom. That's quite high for a recent film.
I mean, look, I enjoyed it. The romantic comedy, if it makes me laugh and has all the feels and it has I'm there for it.
There's a film, there's a documentary that's, I'm not sure whether what, how it's going to be distributed, called Romantic Comedy, by an ex-guest of ours called Elizabeth Sankey. She's like a rom-com fanatic. And she goes through all the rom-com films, all the tropes.
Sort of documentary / deep dive.
Yeah, it's a video essay of romantic comedies. And one of the biggest, as a fan of it, then she starts to unpick the different tropes. First of all, being that Hollywood was more for women when it first started. Then Mencken went, oh, this seems quite interesting. We're going to take over. So that changed the role for women in film, through to the fact that it's generally middle-aged or upper-class straight white people that have the leads in these kind of films. Mm. So I'd like to kind of hear her, as someone who's a fan of rom-coms.
Yeah, I'd love to know what she thinks.
What she thinks on things like this. Repeat viewing score, Susie.
I'm going to say 3. I did watch it 1.5 times. In order to watch it all the way through.
When did you stop the second time?
When I had to leave to come up here tonight.
Okay. I was going to say, you dived out when Keanu finished.
It was at the end of it was the bubbles, the bubbles came out, the lavender bubbles or whatever it was that came out at the end of the dining scene. I might watch it again. I think, if I was with friends and they hadn't seen it, I'd watch it. But yeah.
Helen?
I'm not really hyped to watch it again. It's a little bit long, and I think I got a little bit bored of the breaking up, getting back together. Will they? Won't they? Of course, they're going to thing at the end. So 1.5.
I'm going to go for 2. I reckon. It's fine. Can't see myself thinking to watch. I think there's just other things I'd rather watch again. I want to see more Randall Park stuff. I want to see more Ali Wong stuff. I just want to see them doing more stuff together and in separate things. And for me, it's great to see Randall as not just a side role, or a sidekick. I think it's the first time I've actually seen Ali. So more of those guys. But maybe I probably look to see their other things and watch this again. So I'm going to go for a 1.9. Small screen score. Sarah May.
I think it works really well on the small screen. I think it would work well on the big screen as well. So, but yeah, I mean, I reckon I'd give it a 4.5.
Susie?
I'll give it a 5. I thought it sat absolutely well on the small screen, and I watched it on my iPad, which was a really small screen. And it was totally fine on that.
What rom-coms have we seen recently in cinema?
I don't know. I saw. I'd, oh no, that's not really where I'm going to go.
What's that?
I was going to say. Well, I've been to the cinema recently, like twice in like a week, which is really surreal. But none of those were rom coms.
So I'm trying to think of any rom coms that are inherently cinematic.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of anything.
By their nature, they tend to be more, you know, rooms, yeah. People talking, dialogue.
The English. Oh no, The English Patient isn't a romantic comedy. Sorry, there's romance in it. There's not one romantic comedy.
Yeah, so I think they generally. Well, I mean, this alludes more to my score, but what's your small screen score, Harlan?
So I'm gonna give it a 5 because I would never have seen this otherwise had it not been on Netflix. Mm. I probably would have maybe come across it maybe a bit later because there was a little bit of a buzz about it being kind of fun and you know. A little bit quirkier than usual, but I don't really know whether I would. I'm trying to think now. It's really made me think whether I've seen a romantic comedy at the cinema recently.
Even my favorite,
Bridesmaids.
Yes, that's true.
That's it.
Is that cinematic? I think it's fun seeing that in the cinema.
Shared. I think the thing with that is because it's got those big comedy
shared
moments.
Experience.
Yeah, the shared experience of that, and maybe like, oh, I'm gonna go with my girls. We're gonna go to the cinema. We're gonna get our nails done in boots before.
What was the one with Renee Zellweger, Bridget Jones? You seen that? Any of those in the cinema?
Probably the first one.
Sure, so that was like a big one. Let's go together.
Yeah, like a big cinematic moment. But I don't know. It's. Yeah. So I'm just trying to think. Mind is drawing a blank.
I'm going to go for 5. Yeah, I wouldn't have seen this in the cinema.
I didn't even see it. Did it get a cinema release? I don't know.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
It kind of appeared and everyone was like, oh, it's Keanu. And it's kind of, this one's actually really good. It's not just for...
Does Netflix release all movies?
I think
movies?
It depends on how big a pull it they think it's going to have. So The Irishman's coming out. It might actually be out by the time we release this episode, but that's going to definitely get a cinematic release. And Roma had a small cinematic release. If it gets a cinematic release, it'll be super small. So if this had a cinematic release, it would have been a week maximum. With The Irishman and Roma, that had like 2 weeks. So they still never really pull all the stops, do they?
Because you'd think that they might have, because Crazy Rich Asians was such a massive hit. Mm. You know, and I think there are some correlations, although I think this is better than that
it's
movie.
It's definitely, that's their audience that they're sort of going for.
So I would have thought it would be a good, you know, good one to take a punt on. But yeah, I agree with you. I didn't see it. I didn't see it anywhere. Advertise.
Engagement score.
Well, I'm going to give it a 5 because I was fully engaged.
Okay, Susie.
I'm going to go for 3. The first time I watched it, I did actually pause partway through and then come back to it. And like I say, I only saw half of it today and I'm not sure I'm going to go back and watch the rest.
So what was that, 3?
3.
I like the way people apologise to us.
I'm really apologising to Sarah May because she loves it so much.
Helen?
It's an hour and 41 minutes, if anyone else was counting, which I think maybe, my interest was a bit waning towards the end. I was kind of waiting for them to resolve it all and just kind of get on with it. 3.5.
Yeah, I'm going to go for 2.5 here. I reckon it was fine. After Keanu left and you knew he wasn't going to come back, I was just waiting for the end to happen. There's a few things that happened which kind of sparked my interest. The main one being that, you know, they set up the website and sold the goods and you found out that it was Sasha that was buying all of the band merch. And I was like, oh, that's quite a nice little tweet, nice little thing there. But apart from that, there wasn't anything that really kind of I felt I need to be paying attention to. You knew they were going to get together. There's going to be some point between the last 10, you know, in the last 10 minutes of the film. So I was just kind of waiting for that to happen. And it happened. I was like, okay, good. Good. So that translates to me for 2.5. And we're going to have, that's an overall score of 3.84. This is mainly buoyed by Sarah May's effervescent scoring system for this. Okay. So guys, can we sign off by letting us know where we can find you online? And say bye to whoever's listening.
You can find me at fablegazers.com and on Twitter at fable_gazers, Instagram at fablegazers. Yeah, say hi.
Thanks for listening. You can find me on Twitter at casualbirderpod and on Instagram at casualbirderpodcast. And if you like penguins, I've got episodes on penguins. If you like crows, I've got episodes on crows. but I also do take people out on bird walks. And so if you're from a country or an area that doesn't have the birds we're talking about, have a listen, because hopefully you'll enjoy hearing the bird song.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K Wood Audio. Tell them FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.